Hi, can you state your name, please?
Kristen Bauer. I'm 5'9", and I live in Los Angeles.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Slate Your Name, the show where an actor, that's me, talks to other actors about the highs and lows of working in the entertainment industry. I'm your host, Michael McMillan, and this week I'm sitting down with the wonderful, hilarious actress, Kristen Bauer. You probably know her as Pam from True Blood, one of the greatest television characters of all time, if you ask me. She's also from Once Upon a Time, The Secret Life of the American Teenager. The list goes on and on. She's been working in Hollywood since the early 90s, and she talks to me about how she unconventionally broke into the business and some of the amazing stories that have happened to her along the way. This is a really, really entertaining conversation. Maybe my favorite conversation so far on the show. So I cannot wait for you to hear it. But before we get to that, let's call a quick company meeting. A reminder, write into the show, slateyournamepod@gmail.com. Ask me any questions about the business. And let's get a conversation topic started. How about that? Look, it's summertime. It's time for the Hollywood blockbuster. A lot of summer movies coming out. Why don't you write in and tell me which movie you're most looking forward to watch this summer? It doesn't have to be a big, loud blockbuster. It can be like a tiny independent film. Whatever movie is on your radar or whatever actor is playing in a movie coming up that you're excited about, let me know. Let's get a conversation started about what we're excited to watch this summer. You know what? If you want to make it a TV show, that's fine too. They're all made in Hollywood. Well, and sometimes Georgia. Please do me a favor. Give me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It definitely gets the show to more people. And don't forget, if you like the show, you can support us over at our Patreon. Slate Your Name, The Green Room at patreon.com/slateyourname, where you will get one weekly bonus episode on Tuesdays. This week, we have Kristen Bauer in the green room with me, queuing up a really funny story. This woman has so many great stories. I could just devote this entire podcast to her, I'm telling you. But if you need a little bit more Slate Your Name and you want to support the production of the show, please go to patreon.com/slateyourname. All right. This meeting is adjourned. Let's get right into my conversation with Kristen Bauer from True Blood. Hi, Kristen Bauer. Welcome to Slate Your Name.
Thank you.
One of my favorite people that I've worked with and one of my favorite people to chat with. How have you been? It's been a minute. Hearing your voice on Truest Blood, you have a True Blood podcast that is really bringing back the memories for me. It's been great to listen to you guys on a weekly basis.
So
you're on
right
a break.
Here, yeah. What?
You're on a break from Truest Blood right now.
Well, yes. But, you know, it's very possible that we might be gearing up and we might be hoping that Michael McMillan will come on and talk to us. Is this the time to say, hey, let's...
Anytime. Look, this is a Hollywood podcast. We can schmooze, we can network, we can set some meetings. I'm all about it.
All right, so you gonna do it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Oh my gosh, we can't wait to talk to you.
How's it been going down memory lane? Because it's been almost 10 years since we wrapped the series. So I feel like the zeitgeist has really come back around now. There's a whole new generation of people who haven't seen the show that are now old enough to watch it, I would say, age appropriate. How's it been going down memory lane? What have you learned or remembered that maybe you'd forgotten about the show?
It is so much different than I thought it would be. I just thought, you know, Janina Gavankar said, do you want to do it? And I took about 8 seconds and went, yeah. Because I just thought, I want to go back to talking to my buddies. You know, I mean, our carny folk, that we had the best carnival. We had so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael, we laughed. Gosh, remember that whole sequence? I'm so glad I got to do with you. You know, the vamp camp. I mean, I'm starting to cry. Like, so I like doing the podcast. Deb does an outline and she's organized, uber organized. And I just show up and I'm Mulder. You know, I just cry. I'm like, I'm all about the feelings, man.
Yeah.
But you know what else has been fascinating has been that I realize we're all professional. We all show up and do our thing. But I have no idea how Suzuki designs sets and finds locations. I had no idea how Nathan Barr scored every freaking episode anew. I had no idea what it was like in the writer's room. I didn't want to know. I had to, like, you know, that's how the sausage is made for an actor. So it's fascinating to find out how the show was actually made.
Yeah, I think that's what I've been enjoying about the show is obviously you have some of the actors on, but you have a lot of the creators and behind the scenes people on the show as well, which I think is really smart and kind of gives you, because we obviously appreciated their work. I mean, the set, Suzuki's, I mean, Audrey Fisher's costumes were, I mean, amazing.
Amazing.
So all of that stuff informed our performances so much.
So much.
That you really want to get, and the music is essential. I mean, I don't know if everyone realized that, you know, every episode of True Blood was named after a song, you know?
I'm not sure I knew that.
Yeah, so music was a core element of the series as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's just great. I've been enjoying that, and obviously it's like, I want to go back. I'd started listening, and then I was like, wait. I want to go back and watch each episode on HBO Max and then do the podcast as a post show.
Yes.
So I'm still not caught up with season one, but I've been enjoying it, and it's a good excuse to go back and revisit the show.
It really is, and it's been fun for us to go back and watch it. Exactly. See it anew.
Now without all that pressure, without like wondering.
Yes.
I mean, you're lucky. I mean, spoiler alert, Pam makes it. I don't think anyone ever wanted to kill off Pam.
And you know, I think every week, I was going to say, is it every episode I worked, when I saw Bucky, he'd look at me and go, sorry. And I really believe it every time, even though it was a gag. It was my fear.
That's the problem with working out. And then eventually some of us had to face that reality. And so it was such a bummer. And I guess we should save this for Truest Blood when the time comes. But because the big part of it was just so fun to be a part of.
It was.
That when you were like, oh no, you're just like, it feels like you're getting kicked out of your favorite party.
It does. The vibe we had in the vampire world, I can't speak for all those other shapeshifters and stuff.
I know that's true, because we didn't work with everybody.
No, I have no idea what it was like to be a werewolf. No idea. I don't even know who these people are. I don't even know what their storylines were. I'm watching the show to find out what the hell they did.
So you're watching it for the first time ever?
Yes.
All the way through? Oh, my God.
So I saw parts of it. You know, my husband would have it on, and I'd walk through. But I did not religiously watch it for sure.
Yeah. I think that's common with a lot of actors.
I think so.
I think it gets to a point where I watched every episode. You know what? I haven't seen the finale. I didn't watch the finale.
I don't know if I did.
I watched every episode because I enjoyed the show, and I wanted to see what everyone else was doing. I wanted to see the work Sam Trammell was doing.
Yes.
I wanted to see the stuff that, you know, Nelson was doing.
Oh.
And, you know, all just because there were so many great performances.
Yeah.
And I even though I appeared in a couple brief cameos in season one, I, you know, didn't really know what the show was going to be.
Right.
So I watched all of season one at home knowing that I would be coming in season two. So I got into it. I was like, well, I'm going to also watch it.
Yes.
But
I'm
that's
getting
interesting.
Into it now. And then what's weird about doing the podcast is that I'm averaging while having to watch every episode like five times. So I've gone from not watching it to becoming a huge fan to now being so sick of the show. You know?
Becoming like a real scholar. It is funny that...
I'm like a scholar.
Yeah, once you turn your fun memories into a podcast, the hobby you like into a podcast, it does become work.
That's
which is why I was like, I should just make a podcast about my work since it's work. It's already work. So are you someone who likes to watch your own performances
or no?
How come?
So there's a couple reasons. One is, I'll just get the shallow one out of the way. It's vanity. You know, I think a lot of people have this, like back in the day when you'd have an answering machine and you would randomly hear your own voice. People often cringe at the sound of their own voice. Or video. They watch their wedding video and they're like, oh my God, why did you let me wear that? Their vacation photos. So I have all of that as a human. And then I also have actress pressure. You know, and then I don't want to be thinking when I'm acting, don't turn your head to the left. I mean, my God, Chris, you know, I want to just not have physicality in my head. And then the next biggest thing actually is, especially on a show like True Blood, where I would read the script and we would, and then I'd start preparing for the table read and it would just be living in my head. And then we do the table read. And then we had the luxury of filming for weeks every episode. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd do 15 and 20 days, even 25 days.
Filming. It's crazy. That's like what an independent film has.
Yeah.
If not even sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And a film would be 90 minutes or 2 hours. This is 60 minutes. We're spending 20 to 25 days. That's a film. That's a feature film. So you're filming the three-page scene for 12 hours, you know, and then saying these lines over and over. And the experience in my head is enormous. It is just, it's been living for weeks and that day. And, you know, I said this and Steven said that and Anna looked at me and I looked at her. And then I watch it, 90 seconds.
Yeah.
It can't, yeah, it can't, I'm like, it. And if it was an action sequence like us in Vamp Camp, I mean, we shot that quarter of a page for, what, 2 weeks or something?
I remember you guys being on those harnesses.
Oh.
The scene where you and Alex had to, like, fight each other in the room. Yeah.
We just hung there. And
yeah.
I remember the grips. They'd be like, okay, take them up to the ceiling. And I'd hear three grown men going, ugh. I was like, I can hear you. And so, you know, that would be 4 seconds, you know, so that disparity is excruciating.
Yeah, it's tough. I think a lot of people don't understand that really, we haven't talked about this on the show, how much actors' performances in film and TV are obviously at the mercy mm-hmm. of the editor.
Yeah.
And I would remember... with True Blood, and especially with the cast that we had, we would come up with, oh, let's look at each, you know, let's have this thing going.
This moment.
And then you and I will have this moment happening. Yeah. And there were a lot of those where, because I always felt the cast and the directors were really going to be like, okay, what's mm-hmm. the story we're all telling in this scene?
Mm-hmm.
And especially in some of those larger group sequences, there's so many looks and connections with other characters
mm-hmm.
that I would watch back the show and I'd be like, oh, they missed that moment that Steven and I had that I thought really informed the scene.
Yes.
But of course you can't get all of those tiny little moments. You have to streamline it. You got to streamline it. But the show turned out great, but there were times when I'd be like, oh, I mm-hmm. wish they had got this thing with me and mm-hmm. Ryan here, because that mm-hmm. was such a funny moment to us, or that was sort of a subtextual moment there,
mm-hmm.
and it just didn't end up on the show, you know?
And those details, you know, God is in the details in our minds anyway. You just live for those moments. Those are the satisfying moments when you're acting. And then it's like, well, it would serve the story best if it was in a wide shot, mm-hmm. you know, and you really mm-hmm. can't pick up on it. And so sometimes you win the lottery and I watch a scene and I'm like, oh, that was so, I look amazing. And that was so much better than it was in my head. You know, their lines, you know, all those great Pam lines. Of course, we all knew them when we saw them on the page. You had a lot of wonderful lines, too. I mean, we got, because our characters were funny as well.
Yeah, we got the funny roles.
We got the funny roles, and that's, you know, been, for me in my career, a fun thing. And so you see the line, and you just know this is like, you're like, oh, this is golden, and you don't want to mess it up. And then on the day when we're filming it, it's not a sitcom, so the writers, the camera people can't laugh out loud, right? So you don't really know that you nailed it. And yeah. Then the rest of the cast, you know, we're all bored with each other, you know, right? So like, and if you're doing things right, you don't hear from the director,
mm-hmm.
right? It's silent. They only come talk to you when you have to adjust something. So I get no feedback. And then I'm, you know, to the director, I remember one, blah, blah, vampire emergency, blah. I think it was Michael Lehman. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is it funny? Is it fun? Is it good? He goes, what? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then he'd go correct what he had to correct. And then I said to Alex, am I funny? And he goes, yeah, hilarious. And I'm like, fuck, I'm not nailing this. I'm not nailing. I'm driving home at 3 a.m, still saying the line to the steering wheel. And then I go to a convention, and it's the line that they all want me to write on the picture.
And right.
Right. Yeah. So I guess I did it okay.
Yeah. Oh, you did it great.
I never thought I nailed it.
No, that's so funny because you were such a clear standout as Pam. And I have to say, I had kind of an opposite feeling where that was one of the few jobs where I would drive home being like, I did good work today. I felt good about the work I did today. I think just because I got to put so much into it, you know?
Yes.
I mean, obviously I had insecure moments as we all do, but
yes. There
were only a couple times where I drove home and I was like, I fucking bombed that scene. I know I bombed, you know what I mean?
Terrible.
And I hate that feeling. But that's why I love that job so much. I would drive home going like, I'm finally getting to do the kind of work that I want to do.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. I think I had that feeling mostly. But Pam sort of had like two lines and a lot of scenes. And it was, you know, I think that you had some big scenes and, oh God, you're so great.
Oh, well, thanks.
Oh my God, I can't wait to interview.
Well, this is my job to interview you. So
how did
you get to LA in the first place? Because you grew up, if I recall, in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a Midwest girl, like like myself, a Midwest, young Midwest lady.
Yes.
did you go to New York first? Did you come out to LA right away? Did you go to theater school on the way? How did you get into the business?
So I did go to New York for a semester to go to Parsons Art School.
Oh, wow. I didn't know this. Mm-hmm. This is great.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of art? What was your medium?
Graphic design is what I was going to study there. And I did study for one semester and couldn't have been happier because it was, you know, from Wisconsin to friggin' New York City. Are you fucking kidding me? I was like out of my tree. I had found myself. You know, growing up in Wisconsin was amazing, and I love it there so much. But I did have this burning ache to see something different. Like, the feeling in my little town was like everyone dressed the same and drove the same and talked the same and ate the same, and I wanted variety. So I land in New York City, and I'm like, yes. And then my dad got the report card, which is straight A's, and he was like, where's the math and the science and stuff? And I'm like, thankfully not there.
Yeah, not at any school I want to attend.
Not at any school I want to go to. Dude, I am never doing math. I am never doing science. I ain't doing history. I like English. I like reading and stuff, but like, I am not. I don't know what the heck I want to do, but it is not that. And he was like, well, I'm not paying for it. So you're back at a school that is, you know, you can get a, whatever you call it, regular old bachelor's.
Oh, no.
Right back to the Midwest.
Oh, Midwestern Dad Strikes Back.
Midwestern Dad Strikes Back. God love him. He was like, what the heck are you going to do with your life as an artist? Are you kidding me? So I was at Washington University in St. Louis in the fine art department, but I had to take all the other malarkey. But back in my dad's day, like, that meant something to have a degree. You're well-rounded. You know, that meant something then. So, and my brother and sister, you know, Harvard, Cornell, Stanford, right? So,
okay.
So here I am, you know, the flunky, the black sheep. So all of that. So I was like, okay. I wish that I could have just relaxed a bit. I still wish I could relax a bit. I still haven't learned that. But it was a great fine arts school. But we were the weird kids on the corner of the campus. I had to walk through all the other people that would make fun of us. And then I just was like, all right, I just didn't go to the art, the English and the math and the science classes. So I got all Fs because I never shut up. I was like, I can play that game. And got all A's in the art. And
what did Dad think about that?
Oh, we had a rough patch. We had a rough patch. And he compromised and said I could go to Boston. He was afraid of New York City.
Okay.
But my sister was at Harvard. She and I didn't speak at the time, I think. I mean, she's like, you know, in a sorority, and I'm like shaving half my head, you know, pierced my nose in the bathroom.
Were you a goth? Would you consider yourself to be a goth? Were you a gothy kid or a punky punk?
More punk, because I'm a little older than that. I think goth came because this is like mid 80s.
Okay.
So I'm like Thompson Twins.
Yeah, but artsy and punky and cool.
Funky. Okay.
Yeah. And I love this.
Like to think I was cool, but like, you know, I had the full Thompson Twins hairdo, like the whole side shave, permed and fuchsia.
Oh my God. I'm going to need a photo of
with
this,
with a tail.
Please.
Okay, I'm sending you a photo. I found a photo.
I love this.
Yeah, because back then, you know, first of all, my parents weren't photographing me. And, you know, you had real cameras and real film. And so I went to Boston to go to School of the Museum of Fine Arts. And I get there and it's all modern art. It's not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, can anyone here really draw? Can anyone here really paint? And so I was annoyed with this nonsense. So my boyfriend at the time was a modern artist just on the side for fun. He was a musician. And so I took in all of his paintings and signed them as mine. And they gave me straight A's. And I was like... And I lost respect for the school.
You're a bit of a rebellious kid is what I'm getting.
I'm a bit of a rebellious kid. So then a girlfriend of mine from there who dyed my hair all these funky colors, she moved to LA. I came out to see her and I called my boyfriend. We had just broken up, actually. He's still my friend. He lives near me now, you know, 30 years later. And I said, just send the cats. I am not coming back to Boston. Let me just tell you something. They have laundry in every single apartment building here. And he was like, what? I mean, this was like the promised land to us.
Yeah.
Because the laundromat, man, on the bus, in the rain, with your duffel bag, with your laundry... And
rain or snow. Yeah.
And I could only afford to live in the ghetto in Boston. And it was like, you know, the machine where you put your dollars in never worked. And it was just a nightmare. So I move out here and my parents are like, you're quitting school. I mean, my other two kids are getting their masters. Like, what? And you are a loser. And I'm like, guess I am. Mm. So I looked up jobs for losers and it was become an actor. And I'm just kidding. But, you know.
Well.
Actually.
When nothing else fits, try acting. That's what
I
always say.
That's it. When nothing else. When kids at cons, their dads, they say, you know, my daughter wants to be an actress. What's your advice? I say, does she like anything else? Well, yeah, she kind of also wants to be a vet. Good, then do that. Mm-hmm. Acting is for people who can't do anything else. So I was like selling Herbalife. I was washing windows. I was like, okay, so I'm just going to have a life of like 15 roommates and work menial labor and draw stuff and paint stuff. And then that kind of led me to makeup school. I went to do makeup because I'm a portrait painter in school. So I was like, I can paint actual faces with makeup. So I started doing makeup. And then I was on sets. Wow. And then I was looking at, you know, well, maybe I could do that. Never acted. Went to Beverly Hills Playhouse, started studying with Jocelyn Jones.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah.
My first teacher, she's amazing, and they have you come down on the stage. Oh, God, it's so horrible. Acting class is so necessary and so painful. So I went down on the stage, sat there. She's like, you know, tell me about yourself. And I said, well, look, I don't know that I could ever be a good actor. I think I could be decent, and I think it'd be better than washing windows. And she goes, well, then I can't help you. Because I teach people to be great.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I can be great. I mean, I'll be great. No, that's cool, too. So I, you know, did a lot of scenes, and I started getting some work, and I was really a go-getter. And I don't know how kids do it today, but, like, I would just show up at every casting. I would do everything.
Yeah, I wanted to know, because I came in, you know, I moved out to L.A. 2002, and I feel mm-hmm. like it was the very end of the analog era of mm-hmm. auditioning, where, like, wow. you were getting your sides faxed to you, scripts would be delivered by a delivery person at your door,
mm-hmm.
And then I feel like shortly after I was here, like, the YouTube era took off and, you know, the digital era really kind of took off.
Oh, wow.
What was it like? Like, you said you started getting work. How did you get work?
Oh, this is back in the day, my friend. So it was a little more of the Wild West because, first of all, you know, I got my first laptop, I think, 95. And I'm starting... Mm-hmm. acting in like 93 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So you would pick up your sides. I mean, I had an eventual, God, I.
Oh, and I guess we should say for those who don't know, sides are.
Oh, right. Sides are the scene that you're going to do in the audition. So it's like 3 pages from the script. And for some reason, we call them sides. It's literally mm-hmm. like they tear out 3 pages from the script or write some crap, you know. Sorry, but yeah, a lot of times crap.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was going for under fives, they were called. You know, you get one line. So it's under 5 lines. And...
Now, who was sending you out? You got an agent?
That's what I'm trying to remember. Somehow, I remember getting postcards made. I got photos made of myself. And I got at Samuel French Bookstore. I don't even know if that was around by the time you came around.
Oh, yeah. It was still there.
Okay. It's because it had everything for actors. Accent tapes, you know, where you could learn a German accent. It had mailing lists of all the casting directors. And I would write them a postcard because I ended up getting into a casting office somehow and I saw the mail come in with the 9x12s, people submitting themselves like me, and they were just going trash, 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 trash. Never opened them.
God.
And I went, okay, I got to get around that.
Yeah, get a postcard.
So I did a postcard. So I remember, I wish I could remember his name. He saw my postcard and called me in for a role, and I got it. And he just thought that that was the funniest, smartest thing. And he had that postcard up on his wall for years. It was kind of too sexy of a photo, actually, but it was possibly a little too sexy. And I still have a copy of it. And
you got it. Well, we'll have to send that and put that on the Instagram so people can judge for themselves.
Yes. It was a beautiful photo. And then, so I would randomly get something and I made up my resume. So back then you had your headshot and on the back your resume was stapled. And I made up all these theater credits on the East Coast. Plays right. I hadn't even read.
Yeah.
And then I remember going into one audition where Burt Reynolds was directing. And he goes, so you played Sherry or whatever. And I was like, mm-hmm. Because he's looking at the resume. And then he goes, so what was that like? And I go, it was a really great experience. And I said something really banal. And he laughed and he went, okay. So by hook or crook, I got some little things. And then I got a pilot that never went anywhere. But
what was that?
It was a friend of mine from acting class who had been booked in it. Oh, God. I don't even think it's on my IMDb because it never saw the light of day. But it was so interesting because they had fired someone. They always fire someone off a pilot. Every pilot, someone's fired. And they needed to book someone that day. And they called me and said, we want to test you. I went in and read. And then they said, we want to test you. And I was like, okay. When? What time? Where? And I hung up the phone. I'm like, what's a test? And it means they're going to take you to the studio and the network, and you're going to go into that big CBS building. I remember it was. They're over there on Beverly Boulevard. And you're going to go into a theater room, and it's going to be a spotlight on you and a dark theater, and you're going to do the scene for the big people. So they say, who's your agent? And I'm like, let me call you back. I'm like, what? So I called my friend and said, I don't have an agent.
Wow.
And she goes, okay, well, let me call my agent, which was Paradigm, and they're kind of a big deal.
Yeah, great agency.
Yeah, and they said, we won't take you, but we'll do the deal. So they negotiated like the lowest amount of money you can. They didn't negotiate. They just put the lowest amount of money on there, which was more money than I was making in a year.
Exactly. At that point, that makes your year.
It made my year. So I go in, I do the audition, and I get it. And I filmed this silly thing that kind of went nowhere. In fact, last night I was watching Rockford Files, and I'm like, yes, that's my life now. And and I'm like, I know this guest star. I think he was the writer on that pilot, and I'm trying to figure out how to find, I've got to go back, and I fell asleep before the end. Get his name and try to find this pilot. So anyway, I got that pilot. Then Paradigm is like, yeah, we're not taking you. So I used to bake him cookies, brownies, and just go in every week and go, hi. And eventually he said, oh my God, you're like a puppy at the pound. He said, all right, I will hip pocket you. And that was the phrase for, I'm going to put you in my pocket. I'm going to send you out, but you are not part of this agency. And I had a really pretty headshot, kind of model-y, and because, you know, I'm doing makeup on models, you know, so I hired one of those.
So you're still working as a makeup artist throughout all this.
Yep. Great. And I'm still doing every random thing I can to pay my $400 a month rent, you know, with so many roommates. And I'm driving an old Scirocco. By the way, auditions, there was no freaking GPS. You had a Thomas Guide
book. Baby. I had the Thomas Guide when I first moved out here, and that's how I learned my way around Los Angeles. I'm glad I had it.
Yes. My husband, who moved here during GPS time not long ago, you know, he's lived in this house with me now for 13 years. Say 3 years ago, we're driving home. We're 3 blocks from the house, and he goes, this is a cool area. What do you call this? And I said, home. He doesn't know where he is. No idea where he is. He doesn't know where Beverly Hills is compared to where we are. Nothing. So anyway, he hip pocketed me, and eventually the agency took me. But the funny story on the headshot was that, and this is my rebel again. I'm realizing I'm a rebel now. is that I brought in my headshot and it had very pretty border and scroll, Kristen Bauer. And he said, look, you're with a real agency now. You need to knock this off. I'm like, knock what off? He goes, this headshot. It doesn't, you don't look like a serious actress, blah, blah, blah. But I look so pretty in the photo that what I did was I didn't want to reshoot. I reprinted the photo with a different type font and a different border. And I took it back to them and said, here, I redid the photo. How is this one? And he said, okay, that's better. Yes, that you look like a real actress now. Do you understand what we were saying?
Wow. Just a change of the font and border. That's all it took.
Because I think my art background.
Yeah, and you saved a few $100.
You didn't have a few $100 to waste. So I was with them for a long time. And I got a series like 2 years later that ran for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I did all sitcoms and was like happy and would have lived there forever if they had stayed around.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I love it. I love your tenacity and your creativity, and that little bit of that rebellious attitude is what got your foot in the door, it sounds like.
I got my SAG card by doing extra work.
Oh, wow. Good on you. That's hard. Extra work. I've done extra work. It's tough.
It's very tough.
Because you're sitting by watching everybody else do what you want to do, I feel like. And really not getting, you know, it's tough. There's a reason why extras are called background, because you really are just set dressing.
You're treated like it.
Yeah, and that sounds rough to say, but it's true.
In fact,
I've encouraged people not to do extra work if they want to be an actor.
I agree.
Go do anything else. I would say do like a week so you can get on set and just see how things work and watch. But but too much of it, and I feel like you start getting depressed. How was your experience doing that stuff? Do you relate to that? Or
I think I did it through you are so right. You do not want to adjust to that level if you want to be in front of the camera. But it was good to be on a set and watch. But I was, I registered through, you know, some extra casting, central casting or something. And I think I got kind of like, you know, because they only give out so many SAG vouchers. So if there's 100 extras, they're only giving out 5 vouchers that could count towards joining the union. And so you kind of had to be a little bit of a featured extra. So I think I told them, and then you got paid a little more. So I think I told them to give me those. So when they specifically needed a girl who was 5'9 and blonde, they called me. So I remember it was Batman. I stood there in this crowd for two weeks.
No way.
Yes.
The Michael Keaton Batman?
The Michael Keaton, and I was Danny DeVito as the Penguin walk by me.
Oh, Batman Returns.
Batman Returns. And I had the Oswald for mayor or whatever button. I just gave it to EJ, Deb's husband.
What a cool prop.
I found it and gave it to him. I saved it all these years. So I got... But I was like, wow, do they waste money on these movies? Because I sat in a holding room for 2 weeks and got paid $250 a day. I was rich. And I was like, and then they used me for 2 seconds when he walked by.
I got to go back. It's been years since I've seen that one. I've got it here. I need to go watch it just to look for you.
Me too. I got to watch it and look for me. And I wonder, I think that I did or could pick myself out of that crowd.
Yeah.
Street crowd. But I also did extra on what was the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie where, Total Recall? Total Recall was great. It was before that where he was like the last action hero. Is that a name?
Yep.
So there was a video store and there were pretty girls in like rubber outfits.
I remember that scene because I was a young man at the time and. Very much remember that scene.
I was one of those girls. I don't know if you can see me in it, but we'll have to watch that and look for me.
Wow.
But the rubber outfits they put us in, you know, they dig through barrels of clothes and bins, and it smelled so bad of BO. It smelled so bad. And another actress who we were kind of coming up together, but he had gotten a speaking role. And she showed up and she was like, oh my God, what part are you playing? And I was like, oh, I'm background. And she was like, oh. And there yeah. I was reeking. Oh. But like... my cousin had married a full-blood Indian and lives in Wisconsin on a reservation. And their kid, thinking that I would just know Arnold, asked for an autograph. So I'm there. There's Arnold. And I'm like, I have to get his autograph. I have to get his autograph. So I say to the director, John McTiernan, could I, you know, is it possible? And he's like, that's rough, but I'll work it out. So at one point he goes, come over. So I go over to Arnold and I'm like, hi, I don't really smell like this, but I am from Wisconsin and Indian. And like, could you? And he did the oddest thing. He stopped and he stared at me. And I was waiting for a response. So I'm looking at him. And then I didn't know what was happening. And he kept staring. So I kept staring. And we ended up in a staring contest. It was the weirdest experience of my life. It became a genuine, this is what we're doing thing.
Wow.
He crossed his arms and I went, okay. And I crossed my arms. People gathered around to watch this. They were ready to film and they just waited until finally I refused. You know, I'm sweating to death in this plastic bag I'm wearing. And he started laughing and he goes, all right, I'll sign for you.
Amazing, Kristen.
How random.
I love it. But again, that little rebellious spark gets you what you want.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to play Show Me Your Name.
Okay.
All right, Kristen, we're already talking about some of these awesome early jobs that you worked on. And we don't have to stick to the early years, but I'm going to go down your I'm at imdb.com, not a sponsor. But I'm going to go down your resume. I'm going to pick some character names, and you're going to tell me what project that was from. And if you need some hints, I'll help you out.
Okay.
Let's start with Susie Endicott. Susie Endicott.
L.A. Law?
No, but same era.
Oh my God.
Classic TV show, classic character actor leading man. Oh. The episode is called Undercover.
What were all those shows? Was it CSI?
No, earlier than that.
Yeah, earlier.
Classic. Yeah.
Chicago Hope?
No, I'm going to give it to you.
Was that on Chicago?
Oh, you might be. We'll find out. Columbo. It was Columbo.
Oh, my God. That was like one of my first jobs. I loved that job.
What an iconic. See, this is the fun thing about your resume. I mean, we have icon after icon showing up on the. From the beginning to present day, you've been in some really iconic shows. That's so cool. What was it like working on Columbo? Did you work with Peter Falk?
I did. My scene was with Peter and Ed. This is going to have to be a 5-hour episode of your podcast.
Fair enough. I don't think we'll get any complaints.
Okay. Because it was... because I'd come from acting school, which was behavior. So he's interrogating me. So I asked for like a People magazine, or I brought one, and I was reading the magazine while he's interrogating me. And the sound guy said, could you not flip the pages because it's messing with the sound? And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. So we do a few more takes and Columbo's like, what happened to the magazine? And I said, it was stupid of me. It was messing with the sound. And he goes, no. That's not how this works. Get her back the magazine. And I don't know if the magazine ended up in there, but there was another thing where he had to look through a whole bunch of quarters and find a specific quarter. And the props guy kept putting it right on top, and he kept burying it. And then he put it on top, and then he buried it. And he goes, I'm trying to find the quarter. I'm hiding it. He goes, and he said in front of all of them, they don't understand what we do. Do not adjust to them. Now, I'm too much of a people pleaser to really do that, to be honest.
I am too.
Yeah, I can't.
I'm always like, how can I make your job easier? Just let me know what you want.
Me too. I'm the actor who does no behavior. I walk in, I hit my mark, I don't move around. Like, I don't want to deal with continuity. I don't want to deal with props. I'm just going to accommodate everyone. No jewelry that jingles. But he was a artist. And he said, basically, I have rubber face. I have like the female Jim Carrey face. So he goes, I want to draw you because you make all kinds of expressions. So I'm like, okay. And freaking Peter Falk. So I go to his house in Beverly Hills. And we would sit there and we would talk. Wow. And when I would make a face, he would go hold that face. And then he would draw me.
Whoa. So wait a minute. You're playing a like one day guest star, yes, maybe on, yes, Columbo. And then you end up hanging out with Peter Falk in his house as, yes, he draws you.
Yes. Yes. And it gets better. It gets better. So then, and he'd pay me.
What?
So I was just like, he'd draw my face. And then he never showed me one of the drawings. I was like, Peter. And he'd go, it's shit, it's shit. And he'd throw it and, you know, crumple it up and throw it in the corner and start over.
Oh.
And then I show up one day and he's got blank pieces of paper and he's got charts and graphs and he's pacing back and forth just like Columbo with his hand to his head. And he goes, I just can't figure out how he did it. He was trying to solve the OJ murder. And he told me he's been over to the house in Brentwood, OJ's house, or her house, I guess, Nicole's house. And he's been looking around and he's been mapping it out and he's, whoa, trying to solve it. And wow. I go, did, because at this point there's tour buses going by these houses.
Yeah.
And I said, did a tour bus go by and see you pacing around the property?
Doing detective work at the murder house?
And he's like, I don't know. And then he signed an autograph for my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to send him a Christmas card every year, and I would get a response. Gosh. You know, wow. And I'd get a Christmas card from him, and here and there I'd bump into him randomly. And then one year after I sent him my Christmas card, I got an autograph photo back. And I also remained friends with Ed Begley Jr. So I contacted Ed.
Wow.
And it was just, to me, a funny story that Peter sent me an autograph again. And he said, oh, yeah, I think he had dementia or something by that point.
Oh.
So that was the end of our, like, 20-year friendship.
What a cool, because it's rare.
Rare.
That you make friends with stars, anyone, on the shows you guest star.
Yes.
Anyone, frankly.
Yes. That you stay in touch. You always say, let's stay in touch. You don't. I stayed in touch with Ed Begley Jr. and I stayed in touch with Peter Falk. It was like my first job, or one of my first jobs.
God, that is amazing.
It was a great scene.
Ugh. Okay, here we go. Moving down the list, more iconic stuff coming up. Jillian, the role of Jillian.
Seinfeld.
Yeah. Tell me about this. This is a classic episode, The Bizarro Jerry.
Oh, it's a great episode.
And you play one of the classic Seinfeld dating horror stories. More of a dating horror story for you than him, but because you had to deal with him being picky. But remind everybody what role this was in Seinfeld.
This was Manhands. And I think I've made more off residuals of that than probably True Blood. Like,
100%. They probably never stop.
They never stop.
Wow.
And it's because the networks negotiated with our union a good deal on residuals, but the streaming networks, our network lets them pay us nothing, basically.
Yeah.
So anyway, I auditioned and got it, and my people and everyone were very excited. And I had not been watching the show. Mm-hmm. So I knew it was a big show and I knew it was cool. But they were filming like 3 days a week or something at that point for like 4 hours a day. They were in season six or seven.
Of course.
And it was, they had just renegotiated Jerry's contract to $5 million an episode.
Oh my God.
And I said to him, $5 million? Dude. Like, wow. And he said, oh my God. He goes, you know, I really, really wanted to go back to New York. I wanted to be done filming. I felt good about the show. I wanted to move on. And so I threw out this crazy high number knowing they would say no. And I went, oh, $5 million. And they went, okay.
Wow. He could have said $10 million.
Totally. He was probably like, why didn't I say 5.1?
Yeah.
So that was a lovely, lovely, lovely set. And I've run into Jerry randomly once every 10 years or so. And I always am like, do I say hi? Do I not say hi? There were a million guest stars. He wouldn't remember my real name. So I walk over to Jerry Seinfeld once every decade and go, hi, I was Manhands. So that's also a fun thing I get to do the rest of my life.
I was Manhands.
I was Manhands. And he's always polite. The wonderful thing about Jerry is he loves to be made to laugh.
Mm.
So when we were just talking in between, he would really enjoy. So he's a good sparring partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Moyer's like that. Skarsgård mm-hmm. is like that. Like they mm-hmm. like to have you Banter. Be funny as well.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely guy.
That's great. And for the record, not your hands in those close-up shots.
For the record, so not my hands. They hired a guy. And
yeah, I want to know. We got to find out how the Manhands are shot.
I know. If you watch it again, like my hands are under and hidden, and then they cut into this other guy's hands. We were laughing so hard. I loved sitcoms because it was just all about making each other laugh. And there was a big discussion about if they should shave his hands, if I should have hairy big hands. I want this to be my job again, Michael. Yeah, where these are the things I hear.
This is the best. Like, this is why, honestly, those kind of conversations are why we do what we mm-hmm. do. Is it too much? Is it a hat on the hat? If they're hairy and big, probably right. we should just go with big.
Right. Big is enough.
Big is enough. You make them hairy, then they're hairy big hands.
We'll shave one of them and not the other one, and let's look at it.
Yeah, exactly. We can always put a little more extra hair on there. We're running out of time. But I'm going to throw one more iconic role. This one's a real softball. Maleficent.
Yeah. God. Okay.
Classic Disney character. Stolen. I'm going to say stolen from you by Angelina Jolie.
I know. That bitch. That gorgeous, you did it first. Famous bitch.
You did it first. Weren't you the first live action?
I don't Maleficent? Remember.
I think you were. I'm going to say you were.
I was.
How did you prepare for that? Did you rewatch the animated film or did you just go, I got this?
Oh my God, did we just meet? I don't prepare for anything, Michael. My whole life, apparently. I was with my mom in Wisconsin and I had to get her to her hair appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And the show hadn't aired yet, Once Upon a Time. And my manager and my agent called me together, which is always like, oh, I booked something. Or there's something to talk about when there's a conference call.
Please hold for both of these people. And you're like, yes.
Yes. When one of them calls you, you didn't get it.
Yeah.
So they go, look, we have an offer for you. Because I was on True Blood.
Mm-hmm.
And they want you to play Maleficent. And I go, wait, is that the green lady with the horns? And they go, yes. So anyway, and they were arguing. One said, don't do it. It's an unproven show. You're on a show. You don't need to fly up to Canada on a weekend to do a guest star. And my manager's like, are you kidding me? It's Eddie and Adam. Like, they did Lost. They're amazing. Of course you do it. we don't know if it's going to be good. Everyone can have clunkers. They're arguing back and forth. My mom is sitting there pointing to her watch. So I took a quarter out of my pocket and I flipped it. Heads, I do it. Tails, I don't. And it was heads. God. And I said, I'm doing it. I got to go. My mom hates being late. So then the schedule came around pretty quickly. And the costume person called me and was like, what are your sizes? What are your measurements? Okay, good. I think it'll fit you. What will fit me? Well, we've got this purple thing. And I said, like Barney? What is it?
Yes, in this version, the character is wearing a purple dinosaur costume.
This purple thing. Not a dress, not... Jesus, the president going over one of our homes. Can you hear that? So there's a helicopter above me, I think.
One of those big, weird military helicopters that flies over our houses like Biden in LA every is now here. And then.
Yeah. So I fly up to Canada, and this is a point that you made earlier about True Blood, is how much the costume and the sets and the props and all of that informs us and how much support we have. So I walk onto a green stage. There's nothing. There's a chair. And they put me in the outfit, and it was like a big purple gown, and it was a whole thing. And it's amazing. And Lana Priya is there, and she's incredibly generous and lovely. And I'm trying to block something interesting, and they say, "But you're standing in the fireplace now," and I'm like, "Oh, sorry." And then I walk 2 feet, and they go, "Now you're in the wall." And I'm like, "Okay, I'm just gonna sit down in this one chair that's here. There's two chairs. I'm just gonna sit in it." And I've got some poor pony that they've stuck a unicorn thing on and dyed black. They're like, "I wouldn't pet him. Your hand will be black." I'm like, "Okay, I'm into animal rights. Whatever." So, then they go, "Show her the scene so she knows where she is." So they show me something on an iPad, and I'm looking at another actress in my dress who I know. And Lana goes, "Don't show her that." So they fired someone.
Oh.
So they already had the purple thing. Mm-hmm. And they were just hoping that I was the same size as the previous actress. So my whole goal was to not play her like Pam, not do an evil voice or the same evil voice, to just try to find something different because there's so many similarities between Maleficent and Pam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, immortal, evil.
Vain, a bit vain.
Vain, the costumes. There were so many similarities. And then after True Blood ended and I'd had a tough year in my family. We'd had a terrible loss during season 7, and I now lost the show.
Yeah.
And I was such a mess. I said, "Well, I'll go to a set that I know. That'd be nice anyway." So I said, "Call them and tell them I would be happy to come back and I'm available." And they did write for us for a whole nother season.
That's great. I know, it's tough. People don't understand when those jobs we love end. They're really hard. it's really hard, especially if you're experiencing a personal loss at the same time.
It was rough.
That's rough. I'm so sorry.
Rough.
One of the downs. We talk about the ups and downs. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for doing this. This was amazing. You are going to hang out in the green room with me.
Okay.
Before we tease that story, where can people find you? Where can people find True's Blood? Do you have any current projects you want to plug? Anything? Let us know.
Okay. Should I do that the second?
Yeah, go for it.
True's Blood, the podcast. That is my main focus right now, and it is everywhere that you get your podcasts. So Apple, Spotify, wherever.
Yeah, whatever you're listening to this on, just flip over to True's Blood and hit subscribe.
Yeah, and then leave us a 5-star review.
Yes, exactly. And do that for me as well.
Yeah,
leave talking about it?
Both of us 5-star. We want 5 stars. We're actors. We want 5. We don't want 4.
Yeah, no. Someone gave me a 3 the other day. I was like, really?
Really?
If you like it. 3 stars as much? Can't you just give the 2 more?
Yeah.
Is one, it that? I understand. One, you just don't like it. But yes. It should just be 1 or 5.
It should be 1 or 5. And if it's 1, look, we're tap dancing hard here. Just go somewhere else. Don't tell us.
Yeah. We'll give you your money back.
Exactly.
For the free podcast you just listened to.
Give you your money back. We'll pay you to go away.
And then, of course, Instagram. I'll tag you on Instagram.
Yeah.
What's your, are you still over there?
Just at Kristen Bauer.
Great. Fantastic. All right. We're going to head over to the green room. Can you give us a little tease of what story you're going to share over there?
Yeah, getting fired.
Fantastic. Been there before myself. Mm. All right, Kristen, thank you so much. Okay, you can hear Kristen and I talking right now in the green room at patreon.com/slateyourname. And don't forget to check out Truest Blood. It's a really fun podcast if you're a fan of the True Blood series. And I look forward to coming by to talk to them during season two. I want to thank Kristen one more time. I want to thank Noah Kopfer for editing and engineering this episode. You can find me at McMills on Instagram. You can book an audition session with me if you need some coaching on an upcoming role or an audition. You can reach me at bookitwithmike@gmail.com. And I'll help you brush up on your technique. All right, everybody. That's it for now. I will talk to you next time. Until then, don't call us. We'll call you.